Okay, let's get going. How's everybody doing? Okay. Oops, works better when you turn it on. Okay, how many people were on the tour on Tuesday? Wasn't that great?
Good.
A lot of interesting things. What did you see that was interesting that you liked the most, that was maybe surprising, that you didn't know? I'll go first. I just thought it's surprising that they have such a burn-in program, that they really, you know, build these robots to last, and the fact that they, you know, test these robots for, you know, run for an entire week is really interesting.
Just the gravity assist on the arm controls.
Yeah.
So they could, just use weaker motors, both as like a cost savings and a safety thing.
Issue. Yeah, that's a good design.
Surprising the level of meticulous in each material that you use and the problems that they have with the Ethernet cable.
Right.
I was like, wow, that little small thing, how would you trace that?
Yeah, it's only by testing for a long time do you find, you know, problems like that. Things, you got electrical, computer, you got software, lots of different things. Anybody else like to share what you thought was neat? Yeah, it sort of looks anthropomorphic. I mean, it's got the two arms mm-hmm. in front and six eyes, you know, and
but
stuff.
But aside from the one in which it really looks like a human, those
right.
two arms just seem to be.
Right. Do you think that all robots ought to look human if they're working with other humans?
I thought the one that looked like a human was a little scary. So.
Yeah. Yeah. There's an issue there. You know, if things look too human, you know, you sort of get caught, you know, in a conflict, you know, is it human or isn't it? So it's actually something to avoid when you're designing things, to making things look too good. So for the people that weren't there, this is the robot that we saw, the PR2. Did anybody catch how much these things cost? $400,000. So when you're thinking about an application for this robot for people with disabilities, you know, you have to, you know, weigh, you know, the cost of $400,000. You know, are you going to buy a $400,000 robot because a person needs to have the robot open the door for them? It's not a very good cost-effective way of, you know, of dealing with that. And so Steve Cousins was talking about, he had an analogy about the Xerox Alto, how much it cost when it first came out, and how much computers cost now. And he was saying, well, you know, the same thing can apply to robots. But is that really the case? I was thinking about that a little bit. Yeah.
I mean, there's a fundamental amount of material you can make a robot, whereas computers with IC design, they can make
right.
predictable amounts of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. With computers, the cost of the chips and the memory have come down so incredibly much to make things like the robot, the computer, you know, much cheaper. But if you have a mechanical system like this, you know, you're not going to find big improvements in motors or batteries or stuff like that. And certainly, you know, in putting this together, you can see how many parts there were, how labor-intensive the assembly is and the testing and stuff like that. So I'm not sure that, you know, that $400 price tag is going to go down by factors of 1,000 or something. Yeah.
If that's the price up, it's like, one, almost everything on it is custom-made.
Right. Right.
Two, the components they are using are, like, top-of-the-line. They use, like, mass-stop motors and all of it. And those are, you know,
right.
four, five, six times as expensive.
Right. So they're really wanting it to be a durable right now. Yeah, and they're not going for cost effectiveness. Okay. good. Thanks.
Just out of curiosity, who's funding these projects?
The company is funded by some folks who have money and so they're not worried about making a profit now. But you know, they have sold four of them, and Bob Bauer, who you might have met, he's a sales rep for like all of Europe and all of the U.S. You know, so he's got a big territory, and so he sold four. But I think at this point in time, they're not worried about selling any. They're worried about, you know, getting a community, a research community of robot researchers going, and see where it takes them from there. And then, you know, like he was saying, you can spin off different, you know, parts of this or different robots. So this is sort of like the base design.
What applications are they targeting? Say the next 2 years.
Yeah. Well, what they have done is they gave away 11 of these robots to researchers around the U.S. and one in Europe, and just have them do whatever. The idea is to build a community, you know, get familiar with this stuff. They have their robot operating system, and it's all open source software. So they want to get a groundswell of users going on this. And there's one of these over at Stanford in the robotics lab over here. So, Professor Nelson sent me an article from 1955 about this robot, and there's actually a video which I hope you'll find amusing.
The ultimate in do-it-yourself projects from the home workshop of 16-year-old Kurt Golden, Arthur the Robot. The second mechanical man built by the Oakland, California high school youth, Arthur represents all of a month's after-school tinkering. The project paid off. Arthur now handles many of Kurt's chores around the house, while the young genius controls operations from the sidelines. Kurt's next step will be to install radio controls and really take it easy while Arthur works. Oops, an accident. Bad aim or something. But was it an accident? Arthur ain't talking. Seems suspicious, though, when the controls are just about foolproof. But Arthur the robot's a harmless fellow, and uh-oh, here he comes. This is where we go. Pros at work in the Los Angeles Coliseum. Rams versus Colts with...
So that's what... That was the state of robots back in 1955. Okay, next Thursday we have the midterm presentations for... ...for students working on team projects. And so each team will be planned for about 15 minutes of presentation. And if you have any questions about the content of that presentation, you can see assignment one or talk to me. Like to have a lot of people here, and the goal is to provide feedback and commentary for the students, because the midterm is sort of like practice for the final one. So it'd be a good opportunity to get some practice in doing your presentation. And the students who are working on individual projects will have presentations outside class time. I sent an email out for this, so I'd like to get from each student who's working on an individual project, 3 1-hour time slots. And the idea there is for me to get an idea of when the students are available and try to have several students present during that 1 hour period. I didn't mean this to be that you had to be available for the 3 1-hour time periods, but I just wanted to get some options so I can maybe, you know, put together a bunch of people. And, you know, after, in the evening is okay. And, you know, if we get enough people who want to do an after an evening presentation, maybe, you know, bring in some pizza or something and make it a lot of fun and nourishing. And any questions about that? Tomorrow there's a couple events. I mentioned this before. There's a mentor-mentee lunch in Y2E2, and this is just for students because we have enough mentors already. And I know that Ernestine's going to be there, so that'll be fun. There'll be a few others as well. And then later in the evening, this talk on Yahoo accessibility is open to the public. So you may want to go to that. Just a few things about some of the technology we've seen already. I got some additional information from Nicole on the Braille Note. And this version has 9 keys. You can see them here, 4, 4, and 1. The bottom one is the space bar, and these 6 keys, these inner 6 keys, correspond to, each one corresponds to a Braille dot on a 6-dot Braille display. And the 2 outer ones here are apparently, you know, like function keys, and they're used to enter commands. And there's 2 versions of this. The smaller one has 18 refreshable Braille display cells, not 16 like I said. 32 is about the maximum number of Braille letters you can have on an 11-inch wide sheet of paper. If you've ever seen a Braille book, you know it's like 11 by 11. It's pretty big. Let's see. And that these things cost a lot of money. We talked about that because they're made in small quantities. And she was saying that even if you have a PC and buy a screen reader and a Braille display accessory that would plug in as like a USB port, it would still cost a lot of money. So this device is built to be a nice small form factor, and it's well used by people who are blind. Question? Yes. I'm not sure if there's a product like that or not. I know that they have one-line Braille displays that are external, and they have to be pretty thick because it uses piezoelectric transducers to push the keys up, so they can't really be real thin. But if they do have Braille displays that you can buy that are refreshable. And they have a version of this that instead of a Braille input, they have a regular ASCII keyboard, and there's a version of this that doesn't have a Braille display because, not all blind people know Braille. Only a very small percentage of blind people, I've heard like 10% of blind people know Braille. It takes a lot of practice to learn Braille, so that's the issue there. Did I answer your question sufficiently? Okay. Nicole had this book called Touch the Stars, and here's some more information about them. She said all of them had tactile pictures, and the one that she had is the only one with embossed pictures. The rest of them have plastic pictures that are added to a flat sheet of paper. And she said that if you make a tactile picture too detailed, you can't understand what it is because you actually don't have to feel it and come up with the pattern in your mind. So, and then from last Thursday, Bill Geary passed out some of these jumper cables, and somebody asked, well, what are these for? And he never got around to it. And so here's Bill's response. So he uses them to attach a napkin around him. And you can see this here. This is when we had dinner together in New Orleans a couple years ago. So he's actually using it here. So it just facilitates, you know, having a napkin on. And then he, in the handouts, there were two articles from the Resna Student Design Competition. And he said that these were examples of ingenuity, which was the subject of his talk. And if you want to get, you know, these are available online as well as the printed handouts. Okay. So next Tuesday, you definitely want to attend Peter Axelson's talk. He's a Stanford alumni. He's one of the was one of the first engineers who was a wheelchair user at Stanford. So he's sort of a trailblazer in that regard. And he's actually going to be flying his two-engine airplane from Nevada into San Jose. So he has an airplane that's adapted for him to use. And so he's got to be able to, he's able to get into it. He's able to, you know, tuck his wheelchair either behind him or, I know the plane that he had before actually had a compartment below the seat that was externally accessible that he was able to put his wheelchair into. So with the two-engine plane, he has to fly into San Jose, but the one-engine plane, he was able to fly into Palo Alto Airport, and a couple times I saw him fly in and land because you can walk right up to the runway in Palo Alto Airport, so that's pretty neat. So he'll be here for a couple days, and after dinner, after class, we're going to have dinner at Stanford Shopping Center because there's a lot of people that want to say hello, and this is be an opportunity for them. If anybody wants to go and pay their own way, you're welcome to do so. Just let me know so I can make the reservations. Okay. But today we're going to have a webinar by Dick Steele. And so we practiced this morning, so hopefully this will work. Dick. Well, that's his screen, but I don't hear Dick yet. Testing, testing.
Welcome to GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. There are 1 other callers on the call.
Yes, I hear you. Can you hear me? Fantastic. Absolutely. Right. Nothing.
Since 1990, and he was also a colleague of mine at the VA Rehab R&D Center, and and he was principal investigator of the CVIC project, researching computers and aphasia. And I was fortunate to see this project sort of blossom from the start at the VA to what it is now. Dick has taught at Harvard, Cornell, MIT, and elsewhere, and he's a Stanford alumni. He has a degree in physics, and after that, it was a smooth transition for him getting his MA and PhD from Harvard in Slavic languages and linguistics, which follows smoothly from physics, don't you think? And Dick, are you still there?
Yep.
Okay. I have a bottle of water if you need it, if you get thirsty, okay? And I also have...
Okay, we're getting a little feedback. At this end, I'm getting a little feedback loop. So I didn't understand everything you said. Oh, thank you. Yeah, stick them right there, right by the podium. Great. Excellent. Okay. Thank you. My plan is to talk for about between 35, maybe a little bit more, and then leave 10 minutes for questions and answers at the end of the time. And so without further ado, then let me describe. This is our website, which is aphasia.com. And the reason that I brought you here is because it's a quick way, first, to give you a very fast overview of our offerings, and then also show you, if you're interested, where you can get additional information or how you could contact me if you have questions later. So we have pictures here of our primary products. The sort of flagship product is the Lingraphica, which you can see here. It's the platform, hardware platform, is an Apple MacBook. But it is manufactured as a piece of durable medical equipment, and it is reimbursed by Medicare as durable medical equipment. That's the same category as power wheelchairs. It is also reimbursed by the Veterans Administration and most other private insurers. And along with the Lingraphica, we have a set of apps, a whole family of apps called the Smalltalk family of apps, that can be run on an Apple iPod or an iPhone or an iPad. And what I'm going to do in just a couple of minutes is demonstrate first the features and operations of the Lingraphica and explain why it is designed to operate the way that it does and the benefits that it provides to people with that we address. And then I'll show you the Smalltalk family of apps also, how it's operated and what the benefits, particular benefits are of having designed it the way we have. The probably before I leave the website, the research page is worth taking a look at, because if you have further questions about the people that we work with, you can find conference presentations and journal articles and so on this page. And all of the material can be downloaded. You can print it out, and if you have questions, you can contact me. The people that we are working to help are people who have aphasia and related disorders. This is aphasia right down here, spelled out in aphasia research. And what aphasia is an acquired deficit in speech, language, and communication because of brain injury or brain damage that's acquired later in life. So what can cause aphasia? Would be, for example, a stroke, and the majority of people that we work with are actually people who have strokes, because so it's an older population. These are people who are typically in their 60s or perhaps even older, because that's when the incidence of stroke begins to pick up. but also a penetrating head wound that damages the language areas of the brain can cause aphasia. A tumor can cause aphasia. Closed head injury, like, for example, an automobile accident that caused a severe concussion, that could cause aphasia-like symptoms. And also tumors or medical procedures can cause aphasia as well. So this is where, if you want to find out more about aphasia, you can come to this page. We actually have videos that you can download that show people with aphasia. So, for example, you can go to the course materials, click on that, and you can see videos and see what these people actually look like. But I'm going to show you now, I'm going to minimize the website, and I'm going to bring up the Lingraphica. So this is the Lingraphica screen, a fairly standard sort of display of the Lingraphica screen. What the Lingraphica does is it provides access to an ability to interact with an extensive vocabulary of icons. And the icons are multimodal, and they are interactive. Now, when I say they're multimodal, they have text associated with them, they have speech output that's associated with them, they have pictures, graphics that are associated with them, many of them have animations that are associated with them, they can have videos that are associated with them as well, and I'll show you each of these. But this multimodality is very important for people with aphasia because it is the combination of all of these things around a word or a meaning that often allow them to reintegrate and use what is a otherwise damaged speech language system. Down below at the bottom of the screen, we have an area which is called the workspace. This is a place where you can assemble collections of icons. You can build phrases or you can put together exercise materials. You can store them from here anywhere you want. You can retrieve them and so on. Now, I'm going to show you the most basic interaction with the Lingraphica icon, which is simply clicking on the icon. So to click on the icon, one way is, as you would know, place the cursor on the icon and then click the clicker bar once. So I'm going to do that once now, and you'll see the response, this interactive and multimodal response.
House.
Okay. So what you should have seen when I clicked on it is the first thing that happened is it reinforces or sort of confirms that it was clicked on by putting a heavy black border around it. Then it gets large about its own center of mass, visual center of mass. It says its name, the word or phrase that's associated with it, and then it gets small again. Now, this behavior is very valuable for people with aphasia because it ensures that a person is, in fact, directing their attention to the icon of interest, because by getting large, it captures their attention, redirects it, and focuses it there. This is important because if you were simply to say, as a speech pathologist might in a therapy session, look at the icon for help, if they didn't understand it, which is a possible consequence of the speech language communication disorder, they didn't understand or they misunderstood what it was that you wanted, they might be looking somewhere else. But by clicking on an icon and causing it to get large in this way,
house,
we can be assured that they in fact will have directed their attention to it. Then when it reverts to its smaller size with a heavy black border around it, you see that there are these buttons that appear above it. These also are designed for the benefit of people with aphasia. And what they do is they permit one touch or one quick operation. This button that's over on the left-hand side with the green arrow that points down, that is the functional equivalent of a double click. So if you were simply to click on this one time, or alternatively, if you have the touch screen version of the Lingraphica, which many people, about half the people who get a Lingraphica, they opt to get it with the touch screen. All you have to do is raise your hand, extend a finger, and touch that button with the green arrow once, so essentially capture a single click with the touch screen, And I'll show you what happens then. It's the equivalent of a double click. I'm clicking once now on the green down arrow. Okay, now you may have heard the double click sound. And now what happens is it opens up that icon, the house, and you see a cutaway view of the house. Now, the reason that a one-click or a one-touch operation can be important to a person with aphasia is because in addition to their speech-language disorders, the damage to their brain, say they had a stroke and they have this area of their brain that simply died, it's called a lesion, an area which no longer works. It basically, the cells all die and eventually they're replaced by the kind of fluids, the cerebrospinal fluid that you have doesn't operate any longer as a part of the brain. That lesion in the brain, in addition to causing speech-language disorders, may cause motor disorders as well. And they may no longer be able to manage a double click. They may no longer even have the functional use of their right hand. And that actually is fairly common in persons with aphasia. So they're using their left hand, their previously non-dominant hand, and they may not be able to do fine, skilled motor performance. So by allowing them to get at everything with a single click, we get around a motor problem often accompanies aphasia. Now, in this scene that you are viewing here with the cutaway view of the house, all of the major portions of the house are icons as well. So all of the rooms are icons. The garage is an icon. The front porch is an icon. The backyard up here is an icon. And if you click on any part of any icon, like this corner of the refrigerator,
kitchen,
then you can see you get the very same response as you did up above. And once again, you can see how this would draw the attention of the person with aphasia because it's the one that frames itself. It's the one that gets large. It's the one that says its own name.
Kitchen.
And now I'll just show you by double-clicking directly on the icon, if you can manage to double-click, then what happens is that as with the kitchen or any of the other rooms, I could have done this with any room. You can go into any room at all, and you get a view of what you would be likely to find in that room. Now, the kitchen is further explorable. I won't do it in the interest of time, but I'll tell you, you can go into the refrigerator and you have fruits and vegetables. You can go into the freezer up here and you have ice cream and ice cubes and frozen food. You can go into the cupboard and you have plates and saucers and so on. And then, once again, every item that you see here is an icon.
Sponge.
Okay. And so you can click on them. And once again, you can see what happens is that you can work with this particular scene here, and you can click on different icons, and you can compare and contrast the materials. And people with aphasia who get the Lingraphica very frequently do this because it allows them to check their own active vocabulary. Could they have named this as a sponge before they were told that it was a sponge when they clicked on it? They can check to see what words are in their active vocabulary, which words aren't. They can set aside those words that they want to work on by transferring a copy down to the workspace. That's what this plus button does. Just clicked on it. It transfers a copy of an item of interest down to the workspace where you have it available. And you can check to see how words sound to you, because in addition to speech-language disorders and motor disorders, you may also have sensory disorders and things sound differently because of the way that auditory processing has been affected by the brain damage. All of those things can be a benefit to the people that we work with. Finally, when you're done, you can return where you started out, the top level, by clicking on this home button that's in the upper left-hand corner. And once again, all of this you can do with simply a single click, or if you have the touchscreen version, just by touching the appropriate targets on the screen. You can travel down, navigate as far as you want in the hierarchy. You can interact with materials at any level. You can return back up to the top level. You can store material from lower levels, bring it back up to the top level. You can interact with it.
Sponge.
And you can even, if you want to, save it by clicking on the Save button, also a one-click operation, and it just puts a copy of the sponge up into the picture gallery up at the top. And if you want to get rid of anything, you can drag it to the trash barrel, or you can click the minus button that appears above it, and you can get rid of material as well. Now, people who get the Wangraphica get it with the this. Is there a question? Okay, I thought there might be a question. Okay, so if the people who get the Wangraphica, they often want to add their own material. Now, as I mentioned, there is an extensive vocabulary, about 5,000 icons that come with the Wangraphica, but often they want to add their own material. In particular, they often want to add pictures of their family members, maybe their pets, maybe close friends, neighbors, favorite restaurants, any and all of that stuff. We've made it possible to very easily add material to the Wangraphica too. So to do that, I'm going to actually illustrate that now. I'm going to add a picture of myself. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to make a new icon. So I select this item, Make New Icon, in the menu bar, and it opens up this icon editor window. And from this single window, these are all of the various things that you can do to any icon in the Wangraphica. Now, this is an icon, any icon that we provide, you can modify using this icon editor in the following ways. You can change the text, you can change the voice that's associated with it, you can add a picture, you can add a video, you can put a page underneath it or so on. And then also you can do this, you can create your own new icons, which I'm going to do right now. I'll take a picture of myself. That's one way of getting using the built-in camera on the Wangraphica, which is, as I mentioned, a MacBook. So the lens of the camera is just above the middle of the screen. But other things that you can do if you want to, you could choose any other icon in the Wangraphica and modify it. Or you could, if you have a digital camera, you can plug it into the side of the Wangraphica and take a picture that you shot.
Welcome to GoToMeeting, online meetings made easy. There are one other callers on the call.
And children on the birthday. So that's an important thing. Yeah. Oh, sorry about that. Okay. It was a network problem. I'll just show you what I did. Sure. They have difficulty understanding. So if you say something to them, you can't be certain that they understood what you said. And they have difficulty expressing things. So very often, a very, very common picture is that they're unable to come up with the words to express what it is that they want to say. And so the Lingraphica assist them by providing pictures to help them understand. If you're talking about, I just added this picture of myself to illustrate how you can put in family members. So now a picture of me here that I just clicked on.
Richard.
Okay. That's a picture of myself, and that just added. So you can use something like that in order to communicate to a person who it is that you're talking about. Because if you just said the word Richard to them, they might or might not know who you're talking about. But by having the picture of the person, the name written out underneath, the word spoken and so on, that multimodal stimulation allows them to get calibrated. Oh, yeah, I know, that's Richard. And then underneath Richard, I just added some information, and then this could be useful in talking with them too. His birthday is coming up, or his birthday just occurred, and so here is a short phrase.
My birthday, January 12th.
And all of this was simply added in while the connection was dropped. But you can see how, for example, now talking with a person with aphasia, if you wanted to tell them that, you know, so-and-so just had a birthday, you could put something like this together. And with that degree of stimulation, they would understand what you were talking about. Now, if they were going to a restaurant, let me show you how they might use the text search to prepare for going to a restaurant. They might be able to produce a few words of a few letters of the word food. We've developed an algorithm which allows them to put in approximate spellings. So let's say they're not sure what the vowels are in food, but they can produce the, you know, first F and the last D, or maybe the first F and the second letter, something of that sort. Notice that food comes up as one of the entries here, even with an imperfect approximation of the spelling. And this allows them to use what it is that they have, which is a damaged speech, language, spelling, writing, reading system. But nonetheless, when they put in an approximate input and come up with a picture, the word written out, and they click on it, and they can hear it spoken, they can identify this as being food. You bring that down into the workspace and drag it up. We now have underneath food, I'm going to just open it up, all of the various kinds of food that are available. So going to a restaurant, you can prepare for ordering by using approximate information about the words that are going to be important. One of the other things, I'm going to open up the activities over here. We have therapy exercises that are built into the Lingraphica. And these, the main things about the therapy exercises is that they're automated. And so you just pick the type of therapy exercise you want to work on. We have a bunch of different types of therapy exercises. I'll open this up just to show you. So we have questions and answers. We have sentence scramble where you, you know, like, I like dessert, but it's mixed up. Dessert like I. And then you can rearrange those, and it'll tell you when, you, when you've got it in a correct I like dessert configuration or not. We have categorization exercises, math exercises. We have spelling exercises and so on. And these, they're automatic. You choose the kind of exercise you want to work on, and it'll allow you to select the difficulty level, and then it just presents the information and will tell you whether your answers are right or wrong, and when you get it right, it will advance you to the very next one. And it also automatically keeps score, and so you can generate a report on how you did, how many you got right, how many you got wrong, and so on. We have practice videos as well. I'm going to open these up. Now, here are some conversation videos. One of the things that can be useful to a person with aphasia is to see a clear shot of a word or phrase being spoken. So here are videos that show that. Here's good.
Good.
Okay. So now at your end, that may or may not have been synchronized because the audio and the video all go in packets, and each one gets played when the last packet is received and it's assembled. So the you may have heard the audio before you saw the articulatory motion or vice versa. But at this end, it's just like a high-definition TV. Let me click on...
Thank you.
An example of a phrase. And this can be very useful both for helping them to understand a word or a phrase, and also to model how it's produced so then they can practice it, maybe get a mirror and look at the articulation.
Thank you.
And then they can practice using it themselves. So that's an as I say, that's an example of the practice videos, and we have communication phrases that are available as well. Now, one of the things about the Lingraphica, because it's on a laptop computer, an Apple MacBook, it's not all that portable. And so that's the reason. What I'm going to do, I'm going to actually quit the Lingraphica. It bids us farewell. And we make apps available on the that run on the iPhone or the iPod Touch or the iPad. Okay, and I'm going to illustrate those right now. The advantage, obviously, the advantage of this is that these are very, very portable. The iPhone or the iPod Touch will fit into a shirt pocket. It weighs about 4 ounces, and we have apps here, the Smalltalk Aphasia. I'll click on the one. This is the male voice, and this is the female voice. We have the Smalltalk Aphasia, and what this allows you to do is it allows you to put together and assemble any material that you want to have with you when you're out in the community. And then you can wirelessly sync it up, and it will transfer over onto this Smalltalk Aphasia app, and you have those materials that you've selected available in your pocket. And these can be static icons, so I'm going to click on this over here. And this shows how the static icons are displayed. They're displayed in a list. And the static icon can be a single icon with a single word. So
yes.
There's yes, here's no.
No.
Or it can be a single static icon and a phrase. And this can be a phrase that we provide, such as I have aphasia.
I have aphasia.
Okay. That's a phrase that we provide, but it could also be a phrase that you or a family member has recorded using that icon editor that I was showing earlier. And you can also scroll down, and you can see down here that you can have, for example, one of those phrase strips. These also can be assembled on the Wing Graphic and then downloaded for display on the Smalltalk Aphasia on the iPod or the iPad or the iPhone. And when
you
click on this,
for
each icon
visiting
gets large
me
and identifies itself, as you saw. So, for example, here are some phrases that might be useful to a person on aphasia when they're working on the telephone. Please call back later. Click on that.
Please call back later.
And this could be used in one of two different ways. Some people with aphasia, when they hear this phrase and they see the text and they see the icon that demonstrates what it means, they can actually repeat it in their own voice. So they could
please call back later.
Listen to that, and then they could say over the phone, please call back later. But even if they can't do that, nonetheless, typically the text, the speech, and the icon here are adequate to confirm to them that what this means accurately. And what they could do is they could hold their portable device up to the speaker on the phone, click on this.
Please call back later.
And the person at the other end would hear, please call back later. And then here's please ask yes and no questions, and then, of course, the yes and no answers and so on. And other things that could be useful when a person with aphasia is using the phone. Here are some emergency communications. Here are some things having to do with ordering a meal if you were to go out. You can have breakfast items that are available. You can have lunch items that are available. Again, this is just for illustration purposes. You could put whatever you want. If you don't want a sandwich, if you want a hamburger, or if you want spaghetti, you could have that under lunch as well. And then various restaurants. As I said, we have a lot of material that's available, and including the logos and the identities of restaurants and restaurant chains, and then a pain scale. And then also on the Smalltalk Aphasia, we can make videos available, and these are like the videos that you saw before. So here's Speak Slowly.
Speak slowly.
Okay. And once again, as I mentioned before, very often these can be used in one of two ways. Many people with aphasia who get the small talk, they'll plug their earbuds in here and put the earbuds on so that they're the only ones that hear the actual speech, but they're hearing the speech and seeing the articulatory motions.
Speak slowly.
And by doing that, they can cue their own speech, and they can turn to whoever else they are talking with, and they can say in their own voice with this kind of cue and this sort of support, speak slowly. Or alternatively, they can just click on this and hold it up to the person so that they can see the screen, and that other person will get the message. So those are the some of the apps. These are other apps that we make available. And I should mention that all of these apps are available at no cost. So if you think that they might be of interest to you, you can download them for free. They are all in the Smalltalk family of apps. I'll open this one up. So they're all called Smalltalk, and then they will be, they have the following words. So Smalltalk Dysphagia is this app, that's swallowing disorders. Smalltalk Oral Motor Exercises. Smalltalk ICU, that's intensive care unit, phrases for the intensive care unit, and so on. So these are all materials that you can download onto your own iPhone, iPod Touch, iPad at no cost, and you can see what they look like. And so on. So with that, actually what I'm going to do is quit these two. And I'm going to do one more thing here, which is just to show you the kinds of materials you can look at. And I would suggest if you want, you can look at this later. your instructor, David Jaffe, asked, what do people look like with aphasia? Well, we have videos here where you can actually watch them. Now, I'm not going to play them over the internet because that's an inefficient way to do it. But you can go to this same website, aphasia.com, and go to the research page and click on this, and you can actually see people with aphasia, non-fluent aphasia. These are people who have difficulty finding words and so on. You can see people with fluent aphasia and so on. You can get basic statistics about aphasia, and you can see some of the obstacles to placing a speech-generating device with people with aphasia. Let me just open that up to show you what this looks like, because these are some of the practical issues that people face when they are thinking about whether or not a speech-generating device is appropriate for a person with aphasia. It may be considered a non-standard treatment. There may be family or patient issues. So families can be disoriented or financially burdened. The patients can be depressed. They may be unsure of where it is that they're going to go. There may be issues with the speech-language pathologist, finding themselves under time pressure for greater productivity. They may not have time to complete the paperwork and so on. And even it may feel as though giving a device to a person who has had a stroke and has acquired aphasia, that is giving up on speech. Now, I think that you probably got the sense when I was making the presentation that that's not the case. In fact, one of the benefits of getting the Lingraphica for many people is that it allows them to cue their own speech, and so they can actually use their own speech and they can identify, using the Lingraphica, those words that they have available and those words that they need some support with, and they can have that support available on their portable iPad device. So those are a few of the things about people with aphasia that you can learn more about if you go to the research page and look under the course materials. So I think what I'll do at this point is, there are about 10 minutes left, and so I'm going to open it up to questions and answers. So what questions do you have?
Okay,
sure. In terms of the people with aphasia, the response is typically positive, but the Lingraphica is not the appropriate device for everyone. And so one of the things that we do is we conduct a no-obligation trial. And in doing this, we consider this to be very important because while the Lingraphica has been designed to be beneficial specifically to people with aphasia and typically is of benefit to them, people can vary according to their living situations, the amount of support, the sorts of issues that they're contending with, and this means that some are good candidates for getting a Lingraphica. Others are not good candidates for getting a Lingraphica. And a very important thing, we believe, is to identify who's who before a Lingraphica placement is made. So we conduct a no-obligation trial. What we do is we mail a Lingraphica, we ship a Lingraphica out to the speech-language pathologist who's working with the client. She sets it up for use by the client, and it goes into the client's home, and it stays there for 2 to 3 weeks while they have an opportunity to use it and their family can use it. Everybody can get calibrated on it. They can see whether, in fact, this is something that the patient can use, that they do use, and that they benefit from using, and that the family supports. And if the answer to those questions are yes, then we proceed with a placement. And if the answers, for whatever reason, to any of those questions is no, then we don't proceed with the placement. And as a consequence, we have a very, very high rate of acceptance because people know what it is that they're getting. We have an extremely low rate of technology abandonment. As a matter of fact, last year, there were no Lingraphicas that were returned to us after they had been placed. We also provide ongoing support to people who get the Lingraphica. We have a company policy of unlimited, no-cost, lifetime support for people who get a Lingraphica, and that's both technical support and clinical support, because we're committed to making certain that placements will be successful if they possibly can be successful. And last year, as I say, we had no returns whatever. In previous years, we've typically had a few returns each year, 2, 3, 4 returns, but last year none. So that suggests if we're doing things the way we think we are, that we're getting better at making sure that a placement will be successful before the Lingraphic is procured for it. Did that answer the question? No, could you repeat the question?
The question was, what's the use of the graphic card?
That's a very good question. They improve, but they typically continue to need support. So they can get better and better, but they don't return to where they were before they had a stroke. We have these reference sheets. I'm just showing you on the research page. And they are organized by type of aphasia and severity of aphasia. I'm just going to click on one of these. I'm not going to try to describe what the aphasia looks like. But here is one of these sheets. This shows you what the problems for a person with this severe chronic Broca's aphasia. So the words come slowly. The motor plans for speech go awry. There are long pauses between words. Utterances are short. They're missing function words very often and so on. But if you go to the second page, you can see the areas where this is a table that shows functional communication. These are the various 16 various items. And these are their scores before using the Lingraphica and after using the Lingraphica. So what you can see is there are areas here where people make very large improvements, both absolutely and relatively. But you can also see that there, even in the best of the cases, there's gaps between where they are, even after improvement, and the 100% level, which would be up about here, which is where they were before they had their stroke. So the answer is people do improve, and they continue to improve with time, but the types of improvements become sort of more and more refined over time, and they do reach kind of an asymptote. So there is an ongoing need for assistance, but there is also a significant improvement through getting the Lingraphica. Does that answer the question? Okay. I was looking here. I don't see it right here, but we have a Spanish language version of the Lingraphica, So we have a Spanish language version of the Lingráfica. And if you get the Spanish language version, we deliberately deliver it on top of the English language version. And the reason for that is because most of the people who get a Lingráfica are U.S. citizens. They live in the United States. And even if their native language is Spanish, remember, these are older folks who very often have grandkids. And it's not unusual that even if their native language is Spanish, that the grandkids may be growing up with native speakers of English, maybe not native speakers of Spanish. And so we provide Spanish on top of English. That's the only additional language that we make available, simply because in the United States, other language groups are not large enough to justify the effort of putting together an entire language version. Now, if we were to go over to foreign countries and sell it, then we would generate those, but that hasn't happened to the present time. Okay, we're actually in the process of doing that right now. So, as I sit here today talking to you, these products that whose pictures you see are the ones that we have available. So, the Lingráfica on a MacBook, and then the Smalltalk, which can run on an iPad, an iPod Touch, or an iPhone, any one of those three. You can download the apps and run them there. You can actually download the apps now to a MacBook as well, and run them also there, but you have the Lingráfica on the MacBook. We're currently in the process of developing Android versions that work on intermediate size devices, so that we have tablets and larger handheld devices. And we, as those become available, we expect to be releasing them starting later this year. Now, not everything will be released at once, but over time, we expect to have a continuing line of products so that people can find the Lingráfica functionality on the platform that they want. Currently, we don't have any three-dimensionality. We merely have those renderings like that cutaway version of the house, which is sort of, it's not three-dimensional. It's 2.5-dimensional, but it gives you kind of the effect, the appearance of looking at three-dimensional objects. Well, thank you. And just one final comment. If you should have a question that occurs later, feel free to send me an email. Your professor can give you my email. I'd be happy to answer questions further on. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
That's it.
Yeah. Bye now. Bye-bye.